Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and start into the boilerplate part of the meeting. Starting with our agenda review. So, do a quick IP note, talk about IRC. We'll get a scribe. We'll do introductions and reintroductions. Touch on a few announcements and current action items for a few minutes. And then we're going to have the group that's been meeting on Thursday report out. In particular, we're going to have an introduction of the progress on rubrics for decentralization, and then other items that Drummond or Marcus might want to bring forth from that Thursday call. So that's what we're going to be doing today. Let me give one quick correction in the IRC. The URL for the previous meeting looked like it wasn't updated or it was a typo. So that is where last week's meeting's notes are. That's an error in the agenda. Okay, quick IP note. So these calls are open to the public. However, if you have not joined the CCG, the Credentials Community Group, then you have not agreed to the collaborators agreement that lets us manage the intellectual property involved in these conversations. If that's the case, one, we invite you to come join the group. It's easy. The IP burden's not that hard. And two, if you haven't, unfortunately, we can't consider substantive technical contributions. So we're interested in things like use cases and comments, but we have to draw the line somewhere to make sure we aren't getting ourselves into patent trouble. Okay, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. We put that URL in the minutes, and we use IRC to manage it, the queue. So please type present plus and your name, preferably first underscore last, so that you get into the minutes correctly. And then you can use Q plus to put yourself on the queue. And if you do Q plus and then the term T0 or TO, T0, two, you can put a reminder so that when you are acknowledged, you get a reminder. Sometimes these conversations go fast. It's easy to forget what you meant you were going to say. Okay, with that, we would love to get a scribe if someone could volunteer to help us out. Scribe basically just takes notes in the IRC, and we have an automated system that then turns those into minutes. We have a list of folks as we try and rotate scribes. So I'm going to click through the scribe list and see if we can find someone from that list. And of course, if you want to volunteer, just chime in on the IRC. Okay. How about Benjamin Young? Are you around? I know Chris Weber isn't really here, despite his IRC alias. Dan Pape, Daniel Buchner, David Chadwick, David Lane. I think I saw that Drummond isn't going to be able to make it. Jarlath O'Carroll. Yeah, Blockchain Week. Slackers. How about Jeff? Believe it or not, you're next on the list. Jeff Orgel, could you take notes for us today?
Brother Joe, I would love to. I'm configuring a bunch of machines on a desk in front of me and was going to buy stand. I've never done it before to top it off, but I will commit to you in the next 2 to 3 that I will. I am not in a good spot today.
Okay, cool. I appreciate
My
that.
apologies.
Oh, Ryan can scribe. Excellent. Good to see you, Ryan, and thank you for volunteering to scribe. And we will give you credit and move you to the back of the public shaming list. Okay, back to the agenda. Okay, introductions and reintroductions. I know we have one new individual. We'd love for you to just give us a couple words about where you're from and what your interest is and what the Credentials Community Group is doing. Bill Barnhill, I know you're new. You I appreciate that you came on right away and said hello and partially introduced yourself to me. So why don't you introduce yourself to the group?
Hi. So I've been doing software development for over 25 years, 18 of them within the Department of Defense. Primarily, I do software solutions in the area of messaging, semantic technology, and autonomous agents. A while ago, I was on the OASIS Technical Advisory Board, and I also served as co-chair for the XDI Technical Committee. That's basically where my love of identity standards and interest in developing something there came about. At that time, I was trying to start a company involved in identity standards, and unfortunately, I had to shelve that due to employer restrictions. And now that I'm with a new employer, I'm actually in the process of reinvestigating that and also getting back into standards development. And I spoke with Drummond before joining the call and asked him if he thought it'd be a good idea. And he suggested I go ahead and join. And so here I am.
Excellent. Glad you could join us, Bill. And let me just confirm your IRC handle is B. Barnhill, I take it? There's a question about that.
Yeah, I will go ahead and change that to Bill Underbar Barnhill for the next call, so it's a little bit easier.
Okay, no worries. We can keep track. The scribe had asked. Okay, do we have anyone else who's new today? First time joining the call.
Yes, this is Joachim, and I'm from Berlin. We have a small startup called Yolocomp, and we work also on decentralized identity. And yeah, it's the first time, and I would love to get involved as much as I can.
Great. Welcome, walking.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else who's first time here? Joaquin, could you spell your name out for us?
Yes, it's JOACHIM, and my last name is Lohkamp, Lohkamp.
Kim Lohkamp. Okay. Kim, did you get that? Oh, he's and you're not
Yeah,
on
thanks.
IRC right now, Joaquin?
No, I'm not, but maybe Marcus, can you type it in?
Well, we've got it. Just if you would like to be added to the queue, just politely say, please add me to the queue during the conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We'd like to do a reintroduction so that as new folks come in, we can introduce you to the olds, folks who've been around for a while. Anyone want to volunteer to reintroduce themselves? Looking through the list, see if I can find a candidate. Mike Lauder around. I don't see Mikula. Andrew Hughes. Moses, I see that you're next on the list, but would you like to introduce yourself? Maybe Moses isn't here.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sure, I'll introduce myself. Hi, everybody. This is Moses. I work for a company called Future Lab Consulting. We're cheerleaders for the decentralized ID space. And right now, my big project is I'm working with the Universal Postal Union, and we're revving up a DID project for them. But the posts tend to be very slow. So it'll take a while, but I think we'll do something quite substantive around deployment for DIDs with 188 post offices and 600,000 postal retail offices potentially. The only other thing I want to say is that I'm like worst scribe. So that's why I've never volunteered. I mean, literally the worst. I didn't want to embarrass myself. Okay, that's it.
Okay, thanks, Moses. And your aversion to scribbling is noted. But thanks for introducing yourself again.
Bye-bye.
Okay, some quick announcements and reminders. We do have dedicated calls related to the DID specification and getting the DID charter in place. And so the Zoom and the time information is there in the agenda for that. So that's Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific time. The next Rebooting Web of Trust, number 9, is in Prague, September 3rd through 6th. We don't have the event right up, but save the date. That is right after Labor Day. So I know for some of you that might make travel obnoxious, but we know for some of you it also will give you a weekend ahead if you want to go early and spend a couple days in Prague. And then on our upcoming meeting agendas looking forward, we are going to return to in 2 weeks to the CCG process. This is part of our continuing effort to try and do what we do better. So the chairs have been updating the process that we started refining last year, and we should have something to share with you in 2 weeks. I don't think we know what we're doing next week, or we would have it on there. And great, Kim just posted that we do have an announcements page where we will be posting information on future meetings.
And
can I steal your thunder, Kim? Go ahead, Kim.
No, we do have, if someone has any topics they want to cover next week, feel free to nominate it. I think that we were sort of caught off guard because we thought that there might be more DID report out. So it turns out, you know, there may turn out to be. So if the DID working group has anything, or DID working group rather, the Thursday meetings have anything else they want to cover next week, that would be a good candidate. But otherwise, if you have a topic to propose for next week, just let us know. And lastly, in general, yes, as Joe said, we're trying to announce out in advance as far as possible the meeting. So keep checking that announcements page to see so you can attend when something interesting is happening.
Cool. Thanks, Kim. Okay, next up is progress on action items, which I think I'm going to hand it right back over to you, Kim. Here's the URL.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so a few things I wanted to call out. First of all, number 71, which Ori proposed, and we find that he's from Transmute. So there's a lot of support for OpenPGP signature suite. Ori doesn't yet have another editor, so I think what we're going to do is not necessarily propose this as a formal work item right now, but proceed with it as an informal work item. In 2 weeks, Joe and I will be discussing more the details about what that means in terms of the new work item process. I have it flagged for Joe, Christopher, and I to follow up this Friday to just figure out if there's any other bookkeeping required, but otherwise it looks like Ori's fine with making this an informal work item, so I think we'll be good to go on that. One other thing I wanted to talk about, I sent an email about it this past weekend, but for the DID working group charter, there were a few GitHub issues that had been identified as very editorial in nature, so the concerns could be addressed just with some wording changes. Maybe we were not too careful with wording choice before. So there were 5 issues. I sent an email about that. They're also referenced in this issue. We gave, I guess, a week heads up last Saturday. So please chime in or respond to the issues or to the mailing list if you have any feedback on that. Otherwise, because these are very trivial in nature and because they have approval from the various folks who are reviewing those, we'll close those this Saturday. Lastly, I wanted to talk about, so we're still figuring out the broader items or action items follow-up from the survey from last week, but I included just something in the agenda for today to, or work item review, to discuss knowledge transfer and onboarding opportunities. If anyone has anything to volunteer, please stand up. And I think Joe has something. I'm going to throw one quick thing out, which is that I think we could use help sort of corralling the various GID working group sort of charter issues. And I'd be willing to help get someone up to speed on that. So it might be a good way to learn how that works. And that's the main thing I had to offer. Joe, I yield back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Kim. I jumped on the queue, actually, for the first issue you brought in. I'm not sure that can be an informal work item. So we'll talk about it on our weekly call. I know we're still sort of fleshing out what the process is or not. I just wanted to know, I think since there's a written output there, I'm not sure it can be informal, but we'll discuss that. Okay. Anyone else before we move on? No one on the queue. Great. Okay, so we're on to our main payload of the day. So did spec meeting report out? I understand Drummond can't make it. Do we have Marcus? I see Marcus in IRC. Maybe we don't really have Marcus. Okay, well, Marcus may be distracted. So let me push forward with the rubrics part of this. So some background for folks, if you haven't been paying attention or are new to the group, there was a very real question triggered by the idea of a potentially centralized DID about what is decentralized enough to qualify a method to be a DID method. In particular, you know, could Facebook make a DID Facebook and arbitrarily do whatever and somehow have that still be a DID in some way? So there was a whole bunch of gnashing of teeth and ripping of clothes and debates and arguments and whatnot. And what we ended up shifting the conversation towards, and we had a couple of sessions at IAW to sort of flesh this out, was the notion of a rubric or a set of rubrics. Still not sure what the plurality is. But the idea of a rubric is it is a tool for evaluating. The most common usage is in education. But in our case, I just wanted to come up with several questions that you could evaluate to understand a given DID method and whether or not it's decentralized in some way. So with that introduction, let me go find the URL for that. Okay, so right now this is just a Google Doc. I see some of you are over there already. Yes, Manu. feel free to comment and suggest over there. I think anyone with the link can comment. I'm just going to walk us through this real quick. And at this level, so let me level set. I'm looking for, am I missing big categories? And am I missing specific questions that could be asked of a method? Eventually, and by eventually I mean within the next week or so, I would like to get this to the point where we might have some spec text that could either go into the DID spec or into the charter, or failing that, something in the use case document, sort of different levels of how normative we want this to be. So here I'm just trying to make sure, are we capturing everything? There are some areas I'll note towards after I walk through it, or I'm sure we're missing stuff. So we're still gathering input, trying to get a good set of possible rubrics. Okay, any questions on that before I dive into that? Yeah, I don't see anyone on the queue. Okay. All right, so right now there are 12 categories and an uncategorized. And this was me basically taking my notes from the conversations at IAW and trying to turn them into real askable questions or evaluatable points. And I did it in two different styles. The first one you'll see are pick the most applicable, and I'll explain that when we look at the first one. And the others are simple yes or no questions that could be asked of any DID method. So let me just go through this list. So starting with permission, which is the blockchain permissioned or unpermissioned? And what came up in the conversation at IAW was that the governance and operations might permission separately. You could have a network that anyone can access, but the governance of that network may be restricted to a handful. So that's what these two first items are trying to evaluate. And in this, pick the most applicable. In this pattern of pick the most applicable, what I'm doing is I'm trying to create a spectrum from, on the one hand, in 1.1.1, anyone can participate fully. That means read, write, and participation in consensus. And on the other end, at 1.1.4, all participation is permissioned. So ideally, that's a spectrum, and I would love suggestions on improving these spectra if you can see a way to clarify it. Okay, so both of these are similar in structure. How open is the operation of the network? How open is the governance of the network? Category two is about financial accountability. So do you know where the money's coming from and why it's flowing to where it's flowing? So again, there's a spectrum there. This next set of notes was actually from the Thursday call, and I'm not sure these are all integrated, but I didn't want to throw them out yet. So third category is code base. So questions around how decentralized is the code base? And I broke that into resolver, registry, and wallet, just because those seemed like the three big software chunks in the ecosystem. And if I'm missing one, let me know, but those seem like the three obvious ones. And they all have the same pattern. So on one end, there are multiple independently funded interoperable implementations, different languages, different operating systems on different hardware. So that's a pretty high requirement. And on the other end, there's a single closed source binary implementation. And then the breaks in the middle are, oh, well, there's one open source, and then there are some multiple interoperable open source. But maybe not in that many languages, or maybe not in all the different operating systems, or maybe not in all the different hardware. So those are about how decentralized is the code base. It's one of the areas Bitcoin gets picked on deservedly. Interoperability. So this is trying to capture for those three components mentioned above, how independently can they work together? So the most centralized option, 404, is there's a single suite that combines resolver, registry, and wallet. That's not very decentralized. On the other hand, you could have that any wallet can work with any resolver on any registry. I'm not sure this is the best way to break these down, but I couldn't think of a better way. So I'm definitely open to input on, because there are three moving parts, and I'm not sure this spectrum really captures them well. But that's what go ahead.
I don't know if you're looking for input right now, Joe, if you want to go through it and input later. So input now.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Okay, so you know the, you know, what's the definition of a wallet is one of the things that
yep.
comes up. So we'd have to define that. And it may be that, you know, this ecosystem, when it is at scale, is composed of a number of different components that may or may not be have varying degrees of interoperability. So this may be a difficult thing. You know, talking about interoperability writ large is far more difficult than talking about interop at the component level. And it's just something to keep in mind. I'm not saying I know what the right way to approach this is. You know, if I had to take a fairly wild guess at this point, it would be to break the ecosystem down into the components. Resolution, you know, wallet, maybe even, wallet, registry, resolver, and then for each one of those things, break down the interoperability of each item, and then that may add up to a larger interoperability score of some kind. Anyway, just some feedback.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. What I wanted here for 401, which I didn't capture, but I want to just acknowledge where you were coming from, is, you know, we don't have any methods that are multi-registry or that are registry agnostic. And that would be a form of interoperability, but it's not well captured here. So,
Joe, this is Ken.
Can you expand on that, Joe?
Let's use the queue. However, who wanted me to expand on it?
Sorry, Joe, I didn't jump in the queue. But while you're on that train of thought, this is Chris Bosco. Just can you expand on what you meant by multi-registry methods?
Sure. So you could have a method that through any number of mechanisms might reside on Bitcoin and Ethereum simultaneously, or on either. So you could have did Joe, to make up Joe's favorite did, and I could register the identifiers both on Bitcoin and Ethereum. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and was there another one? I know two
this
people.
Is Ken. This is Ken. I can't put myself on the queue because I'm driving, but I wanted to know if you're considering agents part of the protocol, are you considering them similar to a wallet, or are you separating them out completely?
It's interesting. I'm not sure what an agent is with regard to the did method. I can certainly imagine writing software that interacts with dids. But are you talking about, what do you mean by agent, Ken?
The software that acts on behalf of a user to either create a did for the pure type method, or it communicates between two different did holders. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah. So the easy answer is, in my categorization, that was probably something the wallet did. But I'm open to suggestions that we should break that out.
I think that the storage is more of what a wallet does, and that the agent part of it is the interaction and the creation and manipulation.
Interesting. Okay. So let me know. Yeah. What is a wallet? To me, the wallet is the UX where you manage your keys and credentials, and so that would be where you would trigger or set up rules for agents. So, not to get in a debate about that, but yeah, I can see you saw wallet as storage as opposed to the interaction part.
Correct, and I can also see your opinion as well, that I'm not dead set on one or the other, but I just wanted to make it clear what we were talking about.
Yeah. Right, and the wallet often isn't conceptualized as something that's doing things interactively on behalf of the user, although it could. Okay. So I'll see if I can break out agent. And we've got a few more folks in the queue. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I was just thinking, based off of the fact that I'm running into this right now, and I'm wondering, I know it's like we're talking about DIDs, but for verifiable credentials, like we don't yet have a credential that like I can put in any other wallet or any other place or like can be, I can't have a, there's one credential in a sovereign wallet or vice versa. And I mean, when thinking of the wallets, I would think of them as the same way as I think of a solid pod. And so wouldn't this discussion be better saved for figuring out the interoperability of a credential first?
Well, except that DID methods don't necessarily define what credentials are useful. But that's actually a good point on so two answers there. One is this, I'm trying to focus on rubrics for the DID methods, but what we're missing is some methods do have requirements about credentials. So I need to try and tease that out. Because if there are restrictions, then that does lead to the question of how interoperable are they? Okay. And then I know we have one more on the queue at least. Bill, go ahead.
Thanks. I know I'm the new guy here, and I had actually planned to mostly just lurk for today's call. But you did bring up autonomous agents, so I thought I would just chip in and say that for me, just based on the reading I've done so far, if you had a DID, an autonomous agent that used DIDs, it seems like it would contain one or more of both resolvers, a wallet, as well as a personal registry. And by what I mean by personal registry, let's say I had a contact that I know as Bob. Consider that maybe a relative DID. The agent would look that up in the personal registry before it did resolution and maybe map that to a BTCR hash DID and resolve that transparent to the user. That's kind of what I meant by a personal registry. If that makes sense.
Sure. So, that's actually been a topic of several papers that have been produced at Reboot, or at least worked on at Rebooting Web of Trust, sometimes called local names. I wish Christopher Allen were here. He's been involved in, at least as an advisor on many of those papers. Okay, let me see if we can keep going here. So going into category 5, Keymaster. Thanks, Manny. Okay, category 5, cryptography. So now I'm switching into, these are yes or no, starting with 5. So these are not necessarily a spectrum. And I don't think, well, certainly none of the methods I know address all of these. It's sort of the point of this, or the flexibility of this rubric. Okay, so can the individual use their own cryptographic material without sharing secrets? So that's not true at Coinbase or similar. Can DID controllers specify their own cryptographic suite for key generation, signing, hashing, etc.? I don't think I know anyone that does that. And certainly, can DID controllers specify any cryptographic suite? That may not even be desirable. 504, do DID controllers have cryptographically provable control over DID documents? I think that's the touchstone for inquiry about did Facebook. Five is 505. Are all registry transactions publicly inspectable and cryptographically verifiable? That may be synonymous with 504, but I can imagine architectures where that's not true. Actually, I can imagine that there might be. I have not come up with a scheme to do it, however. And there may be specific methods that we want to be able to support that the method may or may not. I'm sorry. There may be cryptographic capabilities that the method may or may not support. And depending on your use case, it might be very important. These could be particular keys, for example. I know for a lot of the implementation stuff, what keys are supported is an issue. Manu, I see you on the queue.
Yeah, there's a so one of the things that I don't remember seeing is forking. So does the DID mechanism prevent forking? So for example, so if you use like purely key-based mechanisms like the OpenPGP mechanism, potentially, I don't know how that's implemented, but just let's take a key method that exists. You could be susceptible to forking. You could be susceptible for not being being able to update the DID document and things like that. So I think forking, we should have something in here on, does the DID method prevent forking? Might be a useful thing to have.
So there is a nod in that direction in 1302. Which is a method resilient against registry forks?
Never mind, that covers it then. I haven't seen that.
It's in the direction. I think we could do better. I'm not sure what it means to be resilient against a fork. I think if we unpacked a couple of use cases of what we mean by forks, we would learn something. Because there are small and big forks, and I don't know what resilience means in terms of testable and evaluatable, right? Let me just make note. Try and come up with some better language on forking. Okay, where were we? So five, cryptography. I'm definitely open to suggestions and input there, especially if certain the cryptographic capabilities that we know are different among methods that may or may not matter. Okay, six is on fiduciary commitments, and I know there was a question. I don't know if Kyle's with us on the call, but there was a question about what the heck do I mean by do any here. So the idea of a fiduciary is that the fiduciary agent has a responsibility to put the interest of their principal ahead of their own interests. So doctors and lawyers have fiduciary commitments. Members of a board have fiduciary obligations to the organization, etc. So 601, do operators of resolvers accept fiduciary responsibility to users? That means all resolvers, which I don't even think we're imagining any methods where that's a requirement. But I could imagine a method that has a trust framework that requires that. And the second half of that is do any means that, well, okay, maybe not all resolvers have to, but if there are resolvers in the ecosystem that accept a fiduciary responsibility, that's interesting. So that's the pattern of these two questions. So the second one is do the operators of registry nodes, and if we can find better language for nodes, maybe it's opposite of the registry network. I'm not sure. But basically, do node operators accept fiduciary responsibility? Do the parties in charge of governance accept fiduciary responsibility? And do wallet creators and maintainers accept fiduciary responsibility? So I don't know anyone who's doing this, but I would like to see it.
Could you provide a couple of examples, Joe, just to clarify what you mean by, like, accepting fiduciary responsibility?
Sure. So when I go to a patent attorney, I know he's not going to steal my great invention because he has an ethical, professional, and legal obligation to put my interests ahead of his own with regard to the business that I bring before him. So he literally can't legally do this. And the fiduciary responsibility is hundreds of years old. It's deep from the equity courts of England in the Western tradition. So it's not contract-based. It's about the fact that people have limited capabilities, and we sometimes need to rely on other people for situations where we could be in a moral hazard if they're not provably looking after our interests. Is that a sufficient illustration, Manu, or you want another
for
one?
For example, and complete that sentence. I mean, I get it, and I get it at a meta level, but what could, like, a wallet provider, or you know, what could, like, a node do? I mean, like, basically, a node's allowed to participate in the consensus process, and if they don't agree with all the other nodes, then they lose, you know, $100,000 that they've staked, like something like that.
Well, so how you might monitor and enforce fiduciary responsibility is a little more complicated. In fact, one of the things, if you step into a fiduciary role, either because you opt in or because you are doing something that is required by law to be a fiduciary, then it's your job to make sure you're acting in the interest of the customer ahead of your own, your principal ahead of your own interests. And so you could do something that you thought or at the time seemed appropriate, but that a judge later says, nope, that actually was not, you were not acting in the best interest of your principal. You were acting in your own best interests. So I don't know if that answers your question. I mean, I gave the example of the patent attorney, but that didn't get traction. Let me see if Kim can chime in.
Yes, I think Manu's having the same reaction I did when I first saw it. It doesn't really feel like a decentralization rubric unless you think about how it's implemented. So I think of it as, yeah, that's a useful capability. Some people might like the fact that it does or doesn't provide fiduciary commitments seems like a separate concern from decentralization. But if you get into like how that occurs, rubrics with the theme of that. So you know, I get that it's a useful characteristic of. Or it may be a useful characteristic of DIBS for some people, but how it fits in with the decentralization rubrics is a little weird unless we want to get into how it's implemented.
Sure. So that's great. So I can address that actually. So so the rubrics are in part of how can we capture the things we are really looking for when we say decentralized. And I think what many of us are really looking for is some reason to be able to trust the system. Because a centralized system has lots of failure points that a lot of us don't trust. And my belief about fiduciary is if we have fiduciary alignment, then the mechanisms will follow. Because when your accountant is on the hook or your attorney is on the hook or your doctor is on the hook for a fiduciary obligation, then they will invest in figuring out the right way to take care of that obligation. And I see some links about fiduciary in the IRC. Okay, Johnny.
Yeah, just in healthcare, I know there's the break the glass option, and I think Justin just actually gave a talk about this a few weeks ago on the OpenID Connect that actually like there is a path to through OpenID Connect that actually has this break the glass. So, but as a physician, you are putting your medical license on the line that you are not doing this inappropriately, and there is documentation as far as that you've broken the glass and the audit trail. So I think one thing would be to unlocking the healthcare records to have a peek into, like, when you're unconscious, that the physician has a moral obligation to do the right thing by you. But, you know, if they have access to your private keys and they steal your Bitcoin, that's, you know, I think the dilemma.
Cool. Thank you, Johnny. Okay. Okay, so I will take under advisement whether or not we can clear up what why fiduciary may or may not make sense in as a rubric. On the other hand, that may be six may end up being Joe's favorite rubrics and nobody else cares, which I think process wise is fine. I think part of, as a requirements guy, what's happening here is, we all came into this with certain passions about certain ideas about what decentralized means, and we aren't 100% aligned. So sort of the whole point of the rubrics is, let's get on the table everything that we each were looking for out of decentralized, and hopefully together as a set that can provide us some guidance moving forward. Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, I wanted to say this looks like great work, and it looks like you spend a lot of time and effort and thinking on working on this. I think it's great, and I'm also grateful to the other chairs for the action plan they put together on that topic. I know I'm not entirely innocent when it comes to starting discussions on this topic. I, like a few others, I was rather passionate and maybe made a few strong comments on the subject. If I hurt anyone's feelings in this process, I'd like to apologize for that. A few weeks ago, I think there was a sense by some people that suddenly anything could be called a DID, right? When I put together this fake DID methods back for Facebook DIDs, I actually got several responses from people who thought that was a great idea and that it should be supported, and so that, at least for me, that triggered a lot of thinking and some comments on the subject. I think it's important that we keep the narrative that there were also some pull requests at some point that proposed to remove some of the language around individual control and independence from central authorities. I think it's important that stays in the specification and also in the charter. Sometimes we like to say we don't want to be ideology focused, or we want to be agnostic to specific ideologies, right? We don't want to get too ideological about DID methods. And some opinions were that any identifier should be supported, whether it's domain names or usernames or Facebook names or whatever. But some of the language that we have around individual control and privacy and independence from central authorities, that is inherently ideological, and I think it's important to keep that. But with this set of rubrics, I think that's really helpful, and with that can also go ahead, at least from my perspective, to work on a DID web method and other methods, as long as we have this set of guiding principles to have some understanding on what these are and what they are meant for. So again, I think this is great, and thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you, Marcus. I'm guilty on the passionate comments, so I appreciate your support of where this has turned. Manu, can we wait for a few minutes? I just want to hit on the other points, and then we can close with your question, because I think that's where we have to get there. But yes, I want to talk about how do we get from this sort of high-level stuff to spec text. So with that in mind, we only have 10 minutes, so I'm just going to scan the next several sections. So 7 is reliable recovery. So these are questions about, you know, can an administrator reset it, or is there some non-administrative way to come back from key loss? 8 is substitutability. and this is related to the interoperability above, but I'm not sure if any of those are actually duplicative. I think this needs to come in line with the interoperability. We discussed that needed some expansion. 9 is about revocation, deactivation, deletion, with some of the notions of what that might mean. I actually don't think 1 and 2 are possible, but I've heard people claim that there were methods that did this, and I was like, really? So 9 is about revocation. 10 is about resolution. Are all DIDs, again, this is in the method, globally resolvable? So I know of at least 2 DID methods that are not. And to me, those seemed very undid-like. But my colleagues who were very passionate about those DID methods were like, no, that's a good DID. And I'm like, okay. Cost is trying to get to the availability economically for everyone to participate. If all DIDs cost $1 million, then there aren't going to be that many DIDs and not that many people are going to use them. And the number is far less than $1 million to be financially restrictive. And then also, are there, you know, free versions of the components of the software, the wallets, the registry, the resolvers? Censorship resistance is trying to channel some of the thinking around Bitcoin and the advocacy there of being independent of central authority to disrupt transactions on the network. And then 13 is just some uncategorized stuff that I wasn't sure where to put them. So forks and is the name definitive. So that's the current wrap. You can email me directly. You can make comments in this email. Let me turn it over to Manu to talk about the need to get this into spec text.
Yeah, it was just a general question to the group. I also, like, you know, huge plus one thank you, Joe, for working on this and for everyone else that contributed at IIW and contributed to the discussion. I know this is a collection of a lot of people's kind of thoughts and feelings about decentralization. The thing I think that kicked this whole discussion off was a number of pull requests that had gone against or were put into the DID spec. So there are pull requests here. Specifically, let me try and find this one. I think it was specifically pull 179. So at this point, and you know, this has a lot of text to kind of modify the specification around the word decentralization. I'm trying to come up with something concrete that we can either decide that this pull request is not going to make it and we need to scrap it and start over, or what we need to modify in the pull request to pull it in. So I'm proposing that we make a new pull request in the DID spec and point to the Google Doc that contains DID method rubrics and mention that it's a piece of work that's ongoing, and just kind of note that as, you know, work continues there around the definition of decentralization. And if readers are wondering what makes a good DID method and what makes a good DID method, right, they can refer to that document to see if the DID method they're looking at meets their needs. So if we have that in the specification, would anyone object to pulling in the thing that updates the abstract to enable, like, the DID web and even maybe potentially the DID Facebook method? Or is someone else willing to take a shot at creating a new pull request that tries to balance everything that we've heard to date? My preference is to work off of the pull request that we already have, and then for people to jump in and suggest changes to it that would make them happy. So anyway, that's the concrete proposal out there. Thoughts?
Okay, so speaking as chair, Manu, I think that's a great recommendation. I don't think people know enough about 179 to decide to support your proposal or not.
Okay.
I don't.
Right.
I'm going to go look at it.
Let me propose two things. So a new PR goes in, points to the DID method rubrics as some work that's ongoing. That goes in the specification. That's the first pull request to go in. I don't think that there would be objections at this point to putting that in the spec. Would anybody object to that going in the spec?
So do we have rubrics as a separate output from the working group in the charter?
Not yet, but we could simultaneously add that. I mean, it feels to me like this, the group feels like this is a core part of something the working group should do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, it feels like the use case documents, it's a side to the spec, but it gives illustration and can then be cited. So I think if we're going to cite it in the spec text, I'd like it to be, an output of the work group. And we'll get this into respec. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I heard that correctly, but I was hearing Manu saying if we pull in that 179, that somehow that change in language somehow gets us closer to enabling the DID web and DID Facebook methods as opposed to before, and I probably need to read that change a lot more carefully to understand that, but I'm not seeing that at face value, so I'm also not sure if I understood that correctly, aspect of it, rather.
That is correct. At least that's my assertion. Other people may disagree, but I think what that PR is trying to do is enable us to get closer to a DID web method specifically, but it also potentially enables DID Facebook to happen. But the counter weight to that is we're now saying we're going to come out with a DID method rubrics thing and clearly outline what our expectation is with respect to, what a good DID method should do. And that will counteract the, DID Facebook methods of the world. But
it's
again,
a relatively small change in 179, just to note. I mean, it's small in number of words. I don't mean to say it's small in terms of its relevance.
And just to put a finer point on it, the change that it makes is before we used to say that, before it used to say that DIDs are highly available, cryptographically verifiable, and independent from a centralized registry, meaning that there was no ability to have or the assertion is there's no ability to use DNS, there's no ability to use Facebook. What it's changed to is DIDs are always highly available and cryptographically verifiable. And in addition, the DIDs that are managed through DLTs, the distributed ledger technologies, are also independent from a centralized registry, identity providers, certificate authority. So it's a minor change in wording, but we're loosening the requirement a bit to make it, make it such that DID web methods are possible. That's the change that 179 attempts. And then if we also, basically, if we did that change and said, and by the way, here's some rubrics to help you understand what the intent with respect to decentralization is with respect to DIDs, and we point to the DID method rubrics document.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'll comment over there, Manu. I know we're running out of time. But let's take this thread to issue 179, and we can wrap this call. Thank you, Manu, for bringing this conversation of the rubrics back to spec text. Because that's where we need to go with this. And with that, thank you all very much for your inputs. We will talk next week.